From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, a conversation with feminist author and Chicana playwright Sheree Moraga. Since the 1980s, Sheree Moraga has been a queer feminist icon, alongside thinkers like Audre Lorde and Gloria Anzaldúa. She's most well known for co-editing the book This Bridge Called My Back, a volume of influential feminist essays from women of color that was published in 1981. But her newest work is focused on a more personal topic, her mom. In 2005, Sheree's mom died after suffering from Alzheimer's disease. In her upcoming memoir, Native Country of the Heart, Sheree explores her mother's life from her experiences as a child laborer picking cotton along the border in the early 20th century to the rollicking 1920s in prohibition-free Tijuana to her mom settling down in the San Gabriel Valley suburbs where Sheree grew up. I sat down with Sheree Moraga to talk about her mom, the way ideas about gender are passed down to our children, and about feminism today. Sheree Moraga, welcome back to Latino USA.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I came to know you because of really what is known as your seminal work. It's called This Bridge Called My Back. How do you describe your work?
Well, I think since, the book is... And almost, I guess it's over, I mean, it's over 35 years old. It came out in 1981. It was co-edited with Gloria Anzaldúa. She and I co-edited it, and it contained the works of African-American women, Native American, Chicana, Latina, Asian-American women. This writing emerged out of the social protest movements, in the 60s and early 70s. Really, the sort of male dominance of those movements was a critical consciousness awakening for women of color. So when you're talking about where is Bridge now, all of these years later, well, certainly what we understand as who women of color are, who people of color are, who women are, and who men are, all of those issues that are pressing upon us now, issues of globalization, immigration, all of that. I feel that the thing about Bridge that was so important is this kind of feminist notion, the personal is political, but the complexity of the personal is what has to be addressed, the multiplicity of our identities.
For many of us, you are that first Chicana radical poet published, who was really breaking a lot of barriers. And so it feels like, for many of us who have known you and known your work, like a lot of this is very personal. Like, we know things about you, about your sexuality and your identity and your political struggles. But you did decide to write a memoir. And that memoir really is about someone else. It's about your mom and the both of your struggle around identity.
Mm-hmm. My mother, I think one of the first poems that I ever thought was a good poem was called, For the Color of My Mother. And, I think that, certainly all the sides of my identity, from being queer, from being, mixed blood, having a white father in the context of a very large Mexican family, all of those things I've written about. But with this book, oh my God, I think with when my mother contracted, Alzheimer's, she was already in her mid-80s, and she was going quite quickly with it. But what scared me, what I thought was going to be one of the most horrible things in my life, because my mother is the family matriarch. We have hundreds of relatives. She was really the cuentista of the family. She kept the stories. People came to her. For her to lose her memory, I felt like there went the culture. There went the whole cultura de la familia. Felt like there was a very sort of Zen or Buddhist prospect to this, in the sense that since she had no memory, when she started to have no memory, all we had was the present tense. And kind of the gift she gave me of every present moment, even when 2 seconds later she wouldn't remember. for her to be the stuff of literature to me, for all of those women, all of our mothers, our grandmothers, our bisabuelas, you know, who we know their stories are everything, and the culture that they have, the knowledge that they have, is never recognized in literature. And so for me, if I can just put one book on the shelf that does that, I feel like I've accomplished a great deal for us, you know, for us as a people.
Cherie, let's talk about your mom. Her name was Elvira. May she rest in peace. She passed away in 2005. And I want to take you back to when you're writing about her. She works as a hat checker and a cigarette girl. She was doing this in Tijuana during Prohibition. It seems somewhat glamorous. I mean, she was working in areas where, like, Clark Gable showed up, Jean Harlow, these Hollywood actors.
Yes.
What's your understanding of your mom as a Mexican woman in the late 1920s and how she was trying to identify herself and how others were identifying her as a woman in Tijuana?
You know, her story, I mean, she was born in the United States, so she had a particular relationship in the sense of having the advantage of, as little schooling as she had, she could speak English. She was bilingual. So when they left to go to, during the Depression, when the family moved down to Tijuana, and those years in Tijuana, they were also a taste she had of a kind of metropolitan life, cosmopolitan life, a city, urban, Chicana, you know, or Mexicana experience. But I do think that it's an image of Mexican women, Mexican-American women, our relation, that, you know, the kind of cultura en la frontera that has seldom been recorded. You know, I say in the book that I think that, you know, how do you keep them down on the farm after they seen Tijuana in the 30s? You get a certain taste of freedom, you know, as a young woman. My mother could talk, you know, out of both sides of her mouth in the sense that she knew how to talk to all classes of people. Because of that experience.
So you're writing about your mom and the stories that your mom is telling you, and you're writing about how you remember those stories. And as you're growing up, your mom tells you about these fond memories that she has for working for her boss at this casino in Tijuana. But then as you get older, Cherie, you kind of realize that these stories were really about a white, wealthy boss that was using his power to make sexual advances at your mom. And while he doesn't succeed at doing that, your mom basically had accepted that this was all stuff that she had to accept if she was going to take on this quote-unquote glamorous job.
Every time she would mention this name of her patron, Wirt Bowman, you know, it's like she'd mention Bowman, and it always kind of creeped me out, even as a kid, you know. And so there's kind of an intuitive sense somehow you have that there's more behind this story. And as I got older, you know, she would tell us a story, and I didn't understand it quite. But then finally she mentioned he basically, once she turned 18, decided it was time for payback. But when you see that, when you see the pressure she suffered under, and she ostensibly was a virgin, you know, it's like that she wasn't going to be a señorita anymore. That's to give up everything for yourself when you're in that period of time as a Mexican woman. That's to be nothing, you know, by those standards of sexism against Mexican women in that period. The book also reflects my own growing understanding of sexism. My growing understanding of what it is really to live under patriarchy, sometimes in these very, very invisible and silent ways.
I mean, we don't have a lot of writers in the United States of America that can write these stories of being a mestiza Mexican daughter and her relationship to her mestiza Mexican mother.
Right.
I mean, that's what I am, too. I'm a mestiza Mexican daughter, and I've got a mestiza Mexican mom. But we don't often talk about us in those terms. What do you think we need to know about that particular relationship?
When you're talking about race, I think that in terms of mestizaje, you know, this is something that is really evident among Latinos. When you're talking about Latinos in general, also in relationship to our African origins. And you know, much of the book really discusses also my mother's own shame or, you know, her feelings about indigenous culture, that indio was a negative term. What I was the most interested in this book is to really identify the ways in which the cultural specificity of our sexism, how we are, you know, how we combine race with our understanding of sexism. It is largely passed down from mother to daughter. That your mother tells you, mijo, be free, go get your education, do what you want. In the best of scenarios, they're telling you that. And then you get the double message also, I mean, particularly of my generation, you know, was that men, you know, that what you're supposed to do is, you know, defer to men. You know, virginity is your most important commodity. You know, so I was raised in very, very traditional ideas about the role of male and female. And the person who taught me that was my mother. You know, not my father, my mother. You can imagine, and then for me to come out as a lesbian was horrible for her, but yet she came through for me. You know, she never, never abandoned me in that, ever, ever in my life. No matter how much she didn't like it. And I think it's the, you know, the Moraga women, including my grandmother, were very, very fierce about passing on that idea of our inferiority as women. When everything about our lives showed that we weren't inferior, including the enormous capacidad de mi mamá. I mean, she was a tremendous fuerza in our lives.
Coming up on Latino USA, Sheree Moraga and I talk about her thoughts on cultural amnesia and the future of politics. Stay with us. No te vayas.
I'm Bob Boylan, creator of the Tiny Desk Concert Series. We've just launched the 2019 Tiny Desk Contest. It's our search for the next great undiscovered artist. The winner gets to play a Tiny Desk Concert. It'll change your life. Find out more at npr.org/Tiny Desk Contest.
We're back, and we're going to pick up the conversation with feminist author and Chicana playwright Sheree Moraga. There is that thing that, you know, when we look around us to the women who have raised us, the grandmothers, the tias, the mamas, there is a tremendous amount of fortitude, and you uncover that your mom has Alzheimer's late in life.
And what was interesting is that what it did is it forced me then to consider larger questions of cultural amnesia, not just private amnesia, but again, making the larger connection. What have we forgotten as Latino Americans or as Mexican Americans? What have we forgotten? What of our origins have we forgot, you know, in this process always of trying to assimilate, you know, to mainstream America?
So what are some of the bigger things that you are worried that we might be erasing or forgetting?
So when you're talking about the nation, I mean, all this nation, yes, we'll take immigrants as long as they look and talk and act like us, us being mainstream America. What's particularly lost is a sense of the of values that have taken thousands of years to shape. You know, values that are like, I mean, even you can even, you know, you look at Mexico, you know, and the idea of the, of who Mexico is. And you think of all the indigenous people that are in those mestizos' bodies and they've been told to be good Mexicans, they have to forget they're Indians. This is what globalization is. Globalization is a monoculture. As you have the death of species, you're having the death of native people, you're having the death of native languages, you're having the death of even our culturas that are mixed, you know. It's hard to even talk about this because I feel it as a visceral thing, and I think that the older one gets, You have a point of view of what's been lost. And I feel like I'm a progressive person. And progressive means as you look forward, you gotta look back.
The last time we spoke, it was 2015. Hillary Clinton had announced that she was running for president. And there was this whole feeling, hopeful feeling around feminism. And I think I said to you in the interview, wow, it feels like 2015 is the year of the woman. Mm. When you look at where we are now in the United States of America, 2019, 4 years after a time when you and I thought that maybe there was a glass breaking for women. Mm-hmm. How are you feeling about women, feminism in the United States?
I mean, after all this time, obviously with Trump, a sense of, you know, depression is not the right word. I mean, it's just a, you know, just a deep, deep, almost sadness, I don't know, you know, and a revulsion, I think, too, and a terror about what's going on in the country. But if it hadn't been for those last, you know, midterm elections, I think I would continue to speak in that way. But to see that many women of color and women together, it really, really made a shift for me in some level. To have those congresswomen now. I look at them as these young women of color feminists. They have never separated the issues ever. And the only way I've ever really believed in feminism is they have to be, it has to be absolutely multi-issued at every level. I just want to say, go girl, you know? I mean, it's like, I absolutely know that the leadership of women of color is everything. And it has to happen on all stages. So I'm very, I'm just emboldened by their own boldness.
So these days, Cherie, when you communicate with your mom from the other side, what is she telling you? What is the voice that you hear from your mom now in your head, in your heart? What is she saying to you?
Well, you're going to make me cry now. It's just funny. I just had a dream just the other day, and I was just waking up. And I felt my mother at the side of my bed, but it was weird because she was at the side of my bed, but I felt her hand on top of my hand. My hand was on my stomach, and I felt her hand on my hand. And then I put my hand over hers, and I could feel her hand. Her hands had a lot of arthritis. She had crooked hands and very muscular hands, too. She was a little hardworking, and I could read everything about her in that hand. The feeling I got is that because of the book coming out too, of course, you know, it's like, you know, me pongo nerviosa, you know, it's like I worry, and it's you know, you always want to make sure that you've done the right thing. And I felt utter approval from her, utter support, you know, like, no te preocupes, mija, todo bien. It was really good. It's all right. Everything's going to be all right. And that was a beautiful dream. I felt really lucky to get it, you know, that kind of sign.
And I feel very lucky that you shared it with all of us. Mm. Cherie Moraga, thank you for all of your work and for your memoir. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Maria. It's beautiful to talk to you as always. And thank you for your work.
Cherie Moraga is a feminist thinker and writer. Her latest book is titled Native Country of the Heart, a memoir. It's out April 2nd. This episode was produced by Sofia Paliza-Ka and Lucas Southard and edited by Marlon Bishop. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Antonia Sergido, Maggie Freeling, Janice Yamoka, and Sayer Quevedo, with help from Maya Cueva and additional editing by Allison McAdam. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholz. Our intern is Caroline Aguirre. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. And if you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. And one more thing, dear podcast listener. We really love hearing from you. So how about if you take a moment to rate and review us? And just know that we love reading all of your comments. So keep them coming. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Ciao. Hasta la próxima.
Latino USA is made possible in part by Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org. The Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. And Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
I'm really terrible at this, Miguel. I'm going to start all over. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, Venezuelan women are known for their beauty and winning Miss Universe crowns, but now, because of the economic crisis in their country, they're selling their hair to get by. That's next time on Latino USA.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One, offering a variety of credit card options with features for a range of customers, from foodies to travelers. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Credit approval required. Capital One Bank, USA, N.A.